Greetings from Bedlam Farm, where encouragement, creativity, and hope flourish like spring flowers in the garden. I'm John Katz.
And I'm Maria Wolf, and welcome to our podcast.
And thank you, Simon, for the opening bray. That's going to be our signature opening bray. So here we are, I think, with our first official podcast. We've had some unofficial podcasts.
I think this is kind of unofficial, too, because we're still working it out officially. I mean, that was just a YouTube video that I played on my phone of Simon.
That's right.
And officially,
it's going to be inserted professionally.
It'll be smoother.
Into the opening, and Simon's call to life, some of you may remember. It occurred to me, I was telling Maria, that we need to introduce ourselves a little bit to some people who may not be knowing us and coming to Bedlam Farm for the first time, you lucky people.
You mean there are people who don't know who we are, John?
I think billions and billions of people at last count. So look at the potential for growth.
It's a very positive outlook you have.
That's what an editor told me, that all the readers you don't have are just opportunities for growth. So, I'm John Katz. I'm an author. I've written 26 books, mostly about animals, but also about life, spirituality, change, growth, etc. And I'm a blogger, a photographer, and a writer still. Live on Bedlam Farm with Maria in Cambridge, New York. Moved upstate about 10 or 15 years ago, and I'm very happy here. And we'll talk later about what we're doing and all that. And I'm doing the broadcast with my wife, Maria, who can certainly introduce herself.
And I'm Maria Wolf, as I already said, I guess. And I'm an artist. I started seriously making art about 10 years ago when I started my blog, Full Moon Fiber Art. And it was kind of definitely a coming out for me because it was something I always wanted to do and was always afraid to do. And so it was a new start, a new beginning for me. And I just want to let you know that we live on our farm, Bedlam Farm. We have three dogs, two Border Collies and a Boston Terrier, two barn cats, 10 sheep, two donkeys, two chickens.
I think you got all of them.
Is that everyone?
Yeah, various bugs.
I don't want to
bugs
leave anyone
and mice
out.
And,
yeah, we don't. And our fish. How can I leave out our fish and our snails?
Oh my God.
So I post these wonderful snail videos on my blog from time to time. We have some great mystery snails, and they are pretty incredible. Socrates is like my main snail squeeze.
We've gotten very interested in snails, haven't we?
They're much more fascinating than I ever imagined.
And than I ever imagined I would be interested in.
Yeah.
So that's life is interesting. It keeps coming. So we're going to be doing this podcast every week, maybe a little more frequently than that. It's going to go up officially and be registered next week, I think. Instead of music, we're going to open with Simon, our late rescue donkey's bray, which I think a lot of people may recognize. That's kind of a good homage to him. He was a great creature.
He was a great donkey. You know, we had, I mean, he died maybe 4 or 5 years ago. I can't quite remember.
4 years ago.
4 years ago. And looking, we were looking for a bray of his because he gave the greatest good morning brays. And I went back to the video when he first came to the farm, and he looked so pathetic. He was starving and his fur was falling off. And I mean, he just looked awful. And yet he turned out to be just this great, full of life, loving creature once he came back to health.
Simon was rescued by the state police from a farm not too far from here. He was basically starving to death. He was emaciated and filled with sores and infections, had been left out of sight behind a little pen. And was barely alive, and he was such a wreck, we almost didn't want to take him.
I'm just thinking, John, I just have to interrupt it, because I'm just thinking that I just told that story the way I tell the story. And then, of course, you, the storyteller, comes in, and you just fill in all, like, it's like ribs, and you fill in all the stuff in between, which, of course, is what a good storyteller does.
And it was a book.
And then you wrote a book about
Saving Simon. Well, the one amazing thing, it was a big experience for me on many, many levels. One of them was that he was so sick that in order to treat him, we had to really work on a relationship of trust. I had to reach into his mouth and put a balm on his infected gums. Everything was a wreck with him. And he had to let me. And I would hand feed hay to him, as you did. And I would read donkey stories to him at night, which he really loved. And we made this amazing connection with each other that was very precious. He died of a stroke, keeled over in the back in the pasture one day. So I think it's great that we're going to have his prey up there.
It's perfect. It's really what Bedlam Farm is so much about, back to life, you know, from the brink of death, which in a way you and I both did, not literally, but figuratively.
Probably why we related to him.
Yeah.
So one of the things the podcast is going to do is talk about our lives during each week, just what went on during the week, what's on our minds, what we want to talk about, what we want to share. And one of the things I think we have to share, and maybe Maria can describe it to you, is we seem to have a Boston Terrier that likes to herd sheep.
Okay, so I have a question for you, John. Okay. So yesterday, John calls me on my phone. I'm in my studio. He's in his office in the house. My studio is outside of the house in a little old schoolhouse. And I get a phone call, and John says, one of the sheep are out. The neighbor just called, and you know it's in their backyard. So we know what we only have the one neighbor, so we know where the sheep is. And so John takes Red, and I get a cup of grain, and we go out to get the sheep. And my thought was, so how come you chose Red and not Bud?
Well, Red is a herding dog, but it's not a herding dog.
Well, I was thinking maybe because of the way Bud, our Boston Terrier, has been herding lately, or seeming to be herding lately, I thought maybe Bud is the better choice.
Well, Bud is, for those who don't know, is a rescue dog from Arkansas. We've had him about 7 months. He was quite a wreck when he came, and he's a character, and he is out. He loves Red and watches Red and protects Red. And he goes out with, the other day we saw one of our sheep was out alone in the back pasture, and Bud took off. Red, by the way, is sick. He's got eye trouble and other things. Bud took off to the pasture and herded him. He brought him back.
I just couldn't believe it.
It was shocking. It was a shocking thing.
He did exactly what a herding dog is supposed to do.
And better than some herding dogs, since we have a herding dog from Wales who doesn't want to herd sheep. Likes to run circles around them, but doesn't actually want to bother them. So there were two border collies, one of them who's half blind, the other one doesn't like, is the Ferdinand of border collies. So the Boston Terrier goes out, this dog weighs about 15 pounds, and brings back this big Romney sheep, walks it right back into the flock.
It was impressive. I was definitely impressed.
So I've been writing about it on our blog. By the way, we each have blogs. Mine is bedlamfarm.com, and Maria's is fullmoonfiberart.com. And I've been writing about this saga, and people are saying, oh, he wants to help Red, he wants to take over, he wants to herd the sheep. He's not a herding dog. He doesn't physically have the tools to do it. He's not big enough to do it. He doesn't like cold weather. He doesn't like the heat, and
he doesn't really respond to the commands.
He doesn't know what to do once he gets them there. He can't move them and together, but he does sit there and guard Red, who's having trouble seeing, keeps the sheep off of him. And there's something going on there. I mean, whether he's copying him, I don't know. I have to be honest. I don't know what's going on.
You don't. I keep thinking about how you said that Boston Terriers are from the bulldog family, and bulldogs were actually originally bred to chase down bulls
and fight with them.
And fight with them. So if Bud, our little Boston Terrier, has some of that, that DNA in him from way, way back. A Romney sheep is nothing compared to a bull. See, he might have, because he walks right up to them and looks them right in the face and barks at them.
Bud does not have a backup quote mode. He goes right in the donkey's face and the sheep face. He gets nose to nose and barks until they back up, and they do.
So who's going to do that except someone who has this instinct in them to, if you can do that to a bull, you can do it to a sheep or a donkey. I think it's partly that instinct. And I also think, because, I'm the pro on this, I also think that he has been watching the other dogs and he's been picking up on that. I think he really does learn something from them. And I don't think he doesn't respond to the commands. He's not going to be a herding dog, but yeah, well, something's there.
Well, what I've learned in my dog life, and I write about dogs, is that you can see what's going on the outside, but you don't know what's going on the inside. And I think the rarest words in the animal world are, I don't know. And you don't hear, Cesar Millan getting on television, I don't know what to do. But I often don't know what to do. And looking at this, I think, okay, something's happening. He certainly may be copying Red, who's a really good herding dog and who he watches closely. He may be having some instinct of pulling everything together, going out and, he doesn't like things that are alone. Mm-hmm. I think he does reach out to them. When he comes out every morning, he chases every single living thing on the farm. He runs after the chickens, the cat. He doesn't hurt them. He goes after the donkeys, gets in their face. He basically saying, I'm in charge here. This is my place. I may be a little dog, but I think I'm a big dog. And so I think he just bringing her back like where she's supposed to be. That's my guess. That it would look wrong to him for a sheep to be alone out in a pasture And so he may be, whether he doesn't have the herding instinct, of course, neither does fate. And so that's as far as I've gotten with it. It's amazing to see. I've never seen it. I've never heard of it.
It was amazing.
I'm taking pictures of it. You can see them on my blog. And I think we'll just have to watch it and see where it, I have no idea what's going on.
You know what Bud reminds me of? When he runs out into the barnyard and the sheep are there, and he runs like right into the middle of them and they all scatter. And I always think he's like when you're shooting pool and you're breaking the bowls apart, you know, he's like the cue ball going in and making everyone.
Right. And why is he doing it? Because he can.
he does.
So Maria, I want to talk about this hanky. This submission hanky that you've been putting up on your blog, which I think is really an interesting thing. It's tell them, why don't you?
Okay, so years ago, I don't know how many years ago, seven or 6 years ago, somebody sent me a big box of hankies, the hankies that women used to embroider and take with them to church or anywhere. They would always have a hanky and, of course, not tissues. And so there were all these hankies that are on the bottom of drawers and in the back of closets from people's mothers that are never used anymore. And so since people send me fabric for my work all the time, someone sent me this box of hankies. And after having them for a few years, I decided, I figured out how to use them, that I was going to make them into scarves. So over the years, people have continued to send me hankies, and I was making some scarves this past week and came across this one hanky that someone sent to me years ago and I never used. And I remember when I first looked at it, you know, I remember kind of getting a chuckle out of it. And it's a hanky that says, how to keep your husband. It's from the 1950s. It has a famous name on it. Of course, I can't remember it now. And it's only famous within the hanky world. But it's this hanky that says how to keep your husband. And then it has all these little drawings of women and what to do to keep your husband. Like, never get mad. Now I can't remember.
Well, do what he tells you. Submit to him.
Yeah. It basically, the overall theme is hide your emotions. Don't say what you really think.
Don't contradict him.
And submit.
Or be submissive.
Subjugate yourself to.
Don't
to
give
this
him any
person.
Reason to be unhappy.
Right. Don't wear too much perfume. Don't ever try to look innocent. Like really bizarre things. But when I read the one that said, "Don't ever get mad," I got really angry. It was like all the anger that is inside of me, relating to this issue of women having to subjugate themselves to men, women not being allowed to get angry, women not being able to say what they really feel, came up in me. And wow, I think
I want to say one thing here, having looked at this hanky, that my wife, who's been married to me for 8 years and doesn't do any of the things that you're supposed to do to keep your man, and none of them. And I'm thinking, okay, so I missed this golden era of submission. Do you ever think, I'm curious to know, do you ever think that you feel like submitting in our relationship?
You know, it's the thing is, it's in me. I learned to do this. I learned overtly from my mother to do these things, and I learned inadvertently from my mother and both my mother and my father. Of this kind of behavior, this way that a woman is supposed to behave. And it has colored my whole life. It was only about 10 years ago when I got divorced, and I really began to find my voice through meeting you, John, which was very helpful, but also through my art and changing and becoming the person who I really am. But this stuff is still inside of me. I mean, I lived with it for, you know, 45 years. And even though I never really believed it, it's there. It stays inside.
Do you remember when we first were together, you would sometimes say to me, I would say, do you want to go out to eat? And you'd say, well, where do you want to go?
Right.
Or is that what you want to go out to eat?
Right.
And I would say to you, you don't need to say that. It's not up to me. I'm not the king. Not that you were inclined that way to me.
No, but it was, I mean, if it was someone else, I could have been pushed the other way. You know, I mean, you were very good about not doing that, about wanting, and because you knew that a relationship wouldn't last if you were going to behave that way.
I don't have a need to be in charge because I think it's a lot of pressure. And I think we share these decisions. Excuse me, and I'm very comfortable with that. But I did see that at you at first. It's not in you. I think it was just what you had seen.
It's what I had seen. It's what I had learned.
I had the feeling if I said, well, I don't want to go out to dinner, we wouldn't go. You know, you don't want to go, so we're not going to go.
And that it's not true anymore.
No, I mean, it's never really true. But I have to say, I have to be honest. I don't really experience the man in these handkerchiefs.
But I wouldn't get I wouldn't feel that kind of anger. And I think that anger is still inside of me, even though.
Why are you so angry?
It's you know, I think when you repress so many feelings and so many emotions and so many words for so long, it just builds up. And I think it has not. I think it's still in me. It hasn't been released yet. I think it's
the
still
anger or the submission?
The anger from submitting, the anger from behaving a way that was not natural to me, that I didn't really believe in. I think it's still inside of
me. So you let men make decisions for you then at some point?
Yes, definitely.
So you felt you were subject to that?
Absolutely. And, you know, I learned that that's what you do. And I gave into that. And then it became, which is horribly embarrassing to admit, but I didn't want to make decisions. I was afraid to take responsibility because I learned, you know, I was taught that I couldn't do it, that I wasn't capable. And so I was looking for that. I was looking for someone to make those decisions. And I, you know, there was a part of me that always knew I didn't want that. And yet I didn't have the confidence in myself. I didn't have the belief in myself. I think this happens to a lot of women.
I feel like I missed this chapter in your
life.
You
did, thankfully.
But I'm sure it's there. I also thought looking at the hanky, it is a sign of improvement in the times. Imagine putting out such a handkerchief today.
You couldn't do it. And that's such a wonderful thing.
You couldn't do it.
It is such a wonderful thing that it's not the way it used to be. The thing is, you still, it's interesting because the hanky was from the 1950s. And when I thought about it, to me, the 1950s, I think, that's not that long ago. But when you think about it, it's 70 years ago. It's a long time ago, you know. The amazing thing is that there are still many women who can relate to it. The other part that's really, really wonderful is that what I hear from mothers about their daughters is that it is very different and that their daughters behave very differently than they did, and their mothers from the mothers who intentionally taught them differently, and that's really wonderful and encouraging.
Did you see this gender switching? You know, I cook and I shop around here because the artist is not very domestic.
Because you like doing it, I don't.
Yes,
so
yes,
that works.
Yes, dear. Yes, dear. I was thinking of a scene a couple of weeks ago. I was cooking. I was working hard cooking. Marie was at Belly Dancing, and I had gone shopping and was running around buying things for the dinner, which I think was some sort of a special veggie pizza. And I'm cooking, and I remember thinking, getting slightly annoyed. I think, well, here I am slaving over the hot stove all afternoon. She's out belly dancing, and she's late. And what am I going to do with this food? The food is going to be cold. And, you know, I'm trying to get it warm, and she hasn't called me to tell me when she's coming home. And I was getting a little ticked off, and I remember my mother complaining about that all the time. And I'm thinking how easy it is to slip into those roles. You know, that's the phone ring, which I forgot to turn off.
Turn that right off. That's part of the reality of our podcast.
Part of the reality of our podcast. We have a phone right there. But I was thinking, you know, that's I could identify with her frustration because she was always cooking and always ticked off and nobody was appreciating it. Nobody was there on time. The food was getting cold because that's what she did. So I was interesting thinking like that. Well, I kept thinking, why am I getting ticked off? She said her belly dancing class.
But I think that's wonderful for you to be able to experience that and come to an understanding of, oh, that's what it feels like. You know,
yeah.
We should all have to do all the different things so we can say, oh, now I understand what that person feels like.
Well, if you were paying attention, you know, when I was a kid, I was paying attention. I saw my mother's life essentially destroyed by being submissive to men. She was always trying to break out of this boring household ritual and often did. She managed an art gallery. She was a hostess in a vegetarian restaurant. She set up her own art gift shop, which was very classy in Providence. And every one of those was stopped, thwarted, undercutted by my father, who either moved or didn't support it or didn't want her to do it. And she was defeated again and again and again. And it made her crazy with rage and frustration and anger. And in those days, people didn't get divorced, but she just destroyed her life. So I was very, very conscious as a kid of what women's lives could be like with men who were oblivious.
And I have to say, you're pretty unusual, John, because you are incredibly supportive. I mean, this is one of the reasons I married you, is that...
People wondered why you married me, so that's why. That's why you married me.
You're incredibly supportive and sensitive and thoughtful.
You know, and it's selfish. It's also selfish to do that, because that's, you have a good marriage if you're not frustrating the person and denying them.
You would think that would be common sense, but somehow...
So. Well, to me, it was, I love you, of course, but it was also common sense. If I'm going to have a good marriage with this person, a life with this person, I want to encourage her. I don't want her to be sitting here stewing and seething that I blocked her from doing things or didn't support her. And as it turned out, you know, the person inside of you was not a submissive person. I don't know, you maybe saw it around you, but it was not you. And you came out of your little shell, and we haven't had any real submissive issues that I know about.
No, I can't imagine being that way or doing that.
Well, I think it's one of the things we want to be talking about in the podcast is how we do work things out. We have some time left, and there's a couple of things I want to mention. My radio show, Talking to Animals, which I've loved, sadly is no more. Somebody at the station is leaving, and the station doesn't have the resources to keep it going. So fortunately, we're going to be switching to the podcast. Down the road, I think we'll be able to take questions. You can always email us questions on jon@bedlamfarm.com, and you are
maria@fullmoonfiberart.com.
And so you can always contact us if there's certain things we can answer some of your questions about animals.
That would be fun.
It'd be fun to take a question. One or two questions for each podcast. Yeah. So feel free to send them. Part I really miss is talking to people about animals and their lives with animals, and maybe sometimes even helping them. I also want to talk about my refugee kids program. We're trying to get gifted refugee kids into good private schools in the area. We've got two in already and one more, I think, in the oven. So I'm excited about that. Saturday, we're going to have a shearer coming.
Yes, Liz.
Talk about the sheep a little bit and the shearing, Liz.
Okay, well, Liz is a great shearer. She's kind of new to us, but she actually worked with the old shearer that we had. And now she's taken over his business. And so I have 9 sheep. I guess I should say we have 9 sheep, but I kind of see them as my sheep.
Do we have 10?
I'm sorry, we have 10 sheep.
Oh my God, they're good. I thought, well, what happened to one of my sheep?
Well, the one got out yesterday,
what happened to your sheep.
And I have them shorn twice a year and sell their wool on my website. Mm-hmm. And it's really nice wool. We have 4 Romneys. We have Border Luster and Cheviot. And I usually mix the wool together. I dye some of it. I leave some of it natural. And it's always, it's become this ritual. We take the wool to the Vermont Fiber Mill in Vermont. And then we pick it up. We take it twice a year and pick it up twice a year. And watching Liz, we'll put videos of Liz shearing the sheep up on our websites, because watching her shear sheep and watching her deal with sheep is just a beautiful thing. She's so good with them. They're so responsive to her, and she's so, she has just an ease about her. It's such a pleasure to watch her.
You know, part of one of the things I love about our lives here on the farm are these ritualistic relationships. You know, people have been shearing sheep forever up here. And the shears are amazing people. They do it really out of love. They make very little money. They charge like $7 a sheep, which is ridiculous.
It's crazy when you see all the work it takes.
And we always pay them more.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't ask for more, but they'll take it. And they travel from farm to farm, and they bring gossip and news of the other farms, and they look at the sheep and check them out and check their hooves and tell you if they're too heavy or too light. And they're just lovely. We've had the greatest experiences with them. Excuse me. And so Liz has been, she's a young woman, she's been doing this since she was 8.
Right.
And she'll show up and they do this brutish work for several hours.
It's really something.
And get in their car and go to the next farm.
To the next person. Yeah.
And it's just a really nice part of life here to have this kind of ancient ritual being a regular part of our lives.
It really feels special. I love the idea of, so all, you know, for 6 months out of the year, you're watching the sheep. And you're seeing their wool grow. And then the shearer comes and you know, you take all their wool and you put it in bags, and we have to skirt it, which means you pull out all the organic, the pieces of hay and branches and things. And then you bring it to the mill and you get it back as yarn. And then I sell it, and people will send me pictures of the things they make out of that yarn, the socks and the sweaters and the shawls. And it's like, here it was, this stuff growing on the sheep. All of a sudden it becomes something that we can wear. It's just...
And you have a beautiful and very intimate relationship with a lot of your readers and followers. They send you fabric. They send you things from their grandmothers. So, you know, there's this great cycle of people sending you stuff, and it's all vintage.
It always it goes around.
And right, you make around. It and send it back out.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's a beautiful thing to see. I really enjoyed over the years watching you evolve as an artist and watching this symbiotic relationship, which the internet has really made possible. For both of us, really, we couldn't be living here without the internet.
No, I couldn't. I could not be doing
publishing has
I
changed, and my blog has become sort of the focal point of my work life now. I'm still doing books, but books don't occupy the same place in the world as they do.
You know what, John? You have to do your meditation class at the mansion.
I do. I know that. So I think our podcast is going to come to an end.
I think we're talking. Yeah.
No, we're good. We're good.
Okay. We should wrap it up.
I'm watching the time. I have a meditation class at the mansion assisted care place, which I really love. We talk about their lives and about aging and about things that they don't really get to talk about. Very powerful experience for me. And I bring my meditation beads and pass them out. So I'm going to be there in 5 or 10 minutes. It's right down the road. So I think this is our first official podcast.
It's kind of official.
I like this one. I think we're going to just be summing up things that are going on in our lives and our relationship at the farm and the animals. And so I'm very excited about it. It's going to be up officially in a week, I think next week. You'll be able to find it on iTunes and other places.
And be able to go back and listen to the ones you haven't heard.
We're going to have a library on right. So
are we going to end with a Simon Bray too?
I hadn't thought about that. We hadn't discussed that. Do you want to?
I don't know.
Would you like to?
Let's think about it.
Okay.
It
we're going
to be a good way to end.
It's still evolving, but we're putting it together. So thank you for being here, and we will see you soon.
Thanks for listening.